Tell me something. If I wanted to find an illegal copy of The Dark Knight Rises, where would I go? Even though I could go to my... I think it's still in theaters, right? I could go and find it probably in the theater. But let's say I wanted to have it to put on my... I have an iPod Nano with a little tiny screen. Which is... I don't know if you know this. This is how Christopher Nolan wanted you to experience it.
Could you imagine watching it on that? It'd be like Jerry Seinfeld, who takes over for the illegal video recording for Kramer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or that one... Remember that Russian guy that like
I forgot all about that. Yes,
and Jerry gets all you know, he really becomes passionate about it. No, you're doing it all wrong. Multiple camera angles. Very, very funny. Yeah, I don't know. I never understand, like, how does that happen, right? How does someone get like an illegal copy of The Dark Knight Rises like that day, like the day it comes out? And why would you want to watch it? On, you know, like someone filmed it with like a handheld video camera, and like they, you know, shows up on the streets of New York down like in the Bowery District or something, you know, on Canal Street. You can go down and buy like an illegal DVD of it, and they're there. I mean, they're literally there like that day,
right?
How does that happen?
I don't know, because I mean, I don't know. What do you spend to go see a movie? $10? $12?
Yeah, maybe.
And
more.
What do you think you spend for that bootleg? $5?
Yeah, right? Probably.
Right? And you would just think, this is going to be the worst possible quality, right? It's going to be like shaky. People are going to walk in front of the camera. Like halfway through, someone's going to bump them. You know? Why? Like, who's like, I've got to save these $4?
Right.
Like, I've got to get the illegal bootleg so I can watch it. I don't want that movie theater experience, or at least not directly. I kind of want it. Somebody held a camera in the movie theater and had the experience. That's what I want.
Yeah, I can't understand that. And it was sort of like that really crappy experience of that The Dark Knight Rises prologue that we watched. I mean, you know, someone filmed it. It was on the front of the Mission Impossible movie. And someone clearly had filmed it like on a cell phone.
Right.
And not only that, you're trying to listen to Bane, whose voice is already difficult to understand. So it was like pre-mixed down by Nolan. So it's like this, it'd be very painful for you. You couldn't be like, what is he saying? Yeah. Really, you know. Anyway, what's going on? Is King of Trios all set and ready to go?
I would sure hope so, because there's no stopping it. It's like a freight train. It is the wrestling equivalent of the X-Men's juggernaut. There is no stopping it. So it better be. Yeah, and there's a lot coming up, too. The autumn is always a busy time.
I don't know why.
It just seems like it. Annually, that's when I'm always my busiest, when it relates to wrestling. My podcasting schedule stays roughly the same. But my wrestling schedule always gets busiest in the autumn, it seems like. And, you know, Chikara's going all over the place. Upcoming, we've got stops in Alabama, North Carolina, Illinois, Ohio, New York. These are a couple interesting things that are on the calendar. One, at the very end of November, the last day of November, which is a Friday, there is an art show being put on in Center City, Philadelphia, which is, of all things, like a celebration of all things Chikara. It's going to feature photographs, original artwork, all manner of, you know,
Is there going to be one of those, like, glow-in-the-dark, black-light, unicorn-style posters of you? Because I want to get one of those. Get me one.
That's what I want. I want it to be a black-lit poster of me. Me... on a unicorn, right. And like I've got like a lance,
right?
Maybe.
No, he doesn't need to be in it. But I would like to see. Do you ever see the cover? It was like a Prince album cover from years ago, of him like on a horse, naked. He's like on a white horse, naked. No joke. Look it up. And he's just like looking off. He's got like his long black hair at this point. And it's just the most bizarre thing, and it kind of is in keeping with what you had talked about one time with Prince. You know, in the middle of the night, he's just sort of taken to I need a camel,
right?
You know, and he's got like an assistant that actually does that kind of crap for him,
right? I did not know that, but I would hope that would be there, even though that has nothing to do with Chikara, and there would be like a velvety Panther and or Elvis Presley painting of some kind.
Yes.
It'd be in kind of like a gaudy frame. You'd be like, I don't know if I'd keep that frame. I don't think, incidentally, I'd like to point this out. I don't think that these things will be offered for sale. I think it's just a show. This has nothing to do with anything. I'm just going to share with you some weird random knowledge. Did you know that there is a site that gets Mattel exclusives called MattyCollector.com? Did you know this?
They get exclusives for what?
Like exclusive toys that if Mattel or whomever, but I'm 99% sure it's exclusively Mattel collectibles, if they feel like these things would not do well in mass release, you know, like they're extremely niche in their appeal, you can go to MattyCollector.com and like once a month they have some specials there that you can't get anywhere else, that they're only available there. There is a classic Masters of the Universe figure that I guess was never released. And they released it, you know, they've over the years, they've released a lot of the classic figures again, like repackaged, but they look exactly the same. Have you ever seen them, like at Toys R Us? Like, other than they're in a bigger protective bubble, they look exactly like the Masters of the Universe figures did in the mid-80s.
No, I've never seen these.
Well, anyway, they are out there. They do exist. But if you're one of those guys, like you just have to have that kind of stuff, and there was a time when I used to have to have all that stuff. Now I just don't have the space. But Sir Laserlot from the unreleased Masters of the Universe collection is available on MattyCollector.com. That's right, Sir Laserlot. When I said Lance, that made me think of that. It's clearly, he's meant to look like a knight, except that his sword is a laser.
Sir Laserlot.
Laserlot. Right.
Yeah. Was he ever in the show?
No. This was like, you know, they do all kinds of wacky things. Like if there was a proposed, like, extra line of action figures, but the show got canceled so the toys were never made, they might make them and they'll only make 1,000. And then you can, you know, you get them numbered at MattyCollector.com. You know, it's I don't know what you would call these people. Maybe nerds. I'm always reluctant to use that term because I know that's me. But, it's for, like, hardcore collectors, you know, that kind of thing. Hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, my son has a lot of these toys floating around. And he all has different sizes of all these different characters. You know, he's got, like, a little Iron Man, but then he's got, like, a big Captain America. Mm-hmm. You know, where you press...
Right, yeah, they're all they're not the same size.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know how... Like, if I were him, I don't know that I'd... I feel like if I were him, I wouldn't want to play with him that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I would want consistency. So sure. He's got like a big Captain America where you press his chest. He's like, you know, report for duty, soldiers, you know. And then you've got like the little guy who doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Then you've got like little Iron Man. Then you've got like a big Iron Man. You press his chest. He's like, I'm Iron Man. Avengers assemble. You know, you got all these. So it's like different sizes. It's like, I don't know how I would play with these. Like who would be cooler? And then you got like big Thor and like little Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And like the tiny little head, big headed little characters, you know, you can pick up at Target. So it's all mixed. I remember as a kid, like we had like sort of consistency across those lines. You know, I had like all the Secret Wars characters, or not all of them, but I had Secret Wars characters. They're all the same size.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. They were all of the same scale.
Right. Scale's a good word to use. Right.
Mm-hmm. No, I know exactly what you mean.
I mean, does your son mind having different sizes of these characters, or do you keep it consistent?
No, which I think the exact same thing, right? Like that would really bug me. I wouldn't want them to be all different sizes, but it doesn't faze him, you know. The only real exception is that one. I think you gave it to him actually. That giant Captain America,
right?
That's like double the size of everything. You know, like all the other ones are like the size of his thigh. But he doesn't get played with the others. Like he gets played with by himself.
Hmm.
He doesn't intermingle with the smaller characters.
Yeah,
you know.
So. Or I suppose you could have some fun, and he could be like, you know, he'd be like giant Captain America.
Right, yeah, something strange happened, and he was enlarged to a crazy size.
Boy, we're packing right now, getting ready for this big trip, and...
So you're still thinking about doing that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, we...
You leave tomorrow, right?
I leave tomorrow, yeah, so I better be packing. And it's weird, you know, actually trying to pack for this kind of a trip, you know, because it's a European trip, you know, we're renting like a Eurovan, because, you know, so, you know, we're going to be driving along like the Autobahn and stuff, but they're not, you know, like European cars are certainly not as big as they are in America. We like everything gigantic here. If you're going on a road trip in the United States, you know, you get like an RV, you don't have to worry about luggage, right? Who cares? Right. You've got space. It's America.
Right on.
Right. We can have suitcases. With four our suitcases, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, not in Europe. You got to travel light. And so the way I'm looking at it is I'm going to pack but I'm gonna pack, but not overpack, mm-hmm. because I just have a tendency to overpack. So if I can just try to pack, and then that tendency is to go into the closet, and maybe you're like me, I don't know, but you go in and you're like, I'll just throw this extra shirt in there. I'll just throw this extra pair of pants in there. Maybe I'll be in a mood. Well, maybe, you know what, maybe we'll go to a really nice restaurant one night, and I'll need this button-down shirt. And you know what happens? You never touch that shirt.
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean. You come home, and then you come home, and it went with you, and you're like, do I need to wash this?
Right, yeah. It's all folded, and it kind of has like a suitcase smell to it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But you're like, nah.
I know what you mean.
I don't need to get that out of there. I'm trying to streamline my approach this time. And I would really love to see how, like, quietly, or I mean, how, yeah, I hit quietly on the brink because I can hear my son yelling in the background. How thinly I can pack, right? With, like, one bag with, like...
Thinly? Oh, you just mean, like, how conservative of the space.
Right, right. I mean, if I've got 7 days, right, wouldn't it be great to just have 7 shirts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sure. But you know that's not going to happen, right?
Oh, certainly. I mean, because I'm going to bring in, like, extra, you know, I'm going to bring in extra kinds of stuff with me, and I'm going to end up bringing, like, an extra zip-up, you know, because God knows, you know, if I get, like, spit up on it because of a baby, mm-hmm. and not even just my baby, but, like, somebody else's baby.
Right, you know? One of those spit-bys when they just, they're passing by and bleh.
Kid never know you. When that's going to happen in Europe.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Europeans, there's certain part, you know, you'd think they'd be more conscientious about that. Like, hey, your kid spit up on me, or hey, you're picking your nose in the restaurant.
Right.
You know, they just have different social mores about that.
Right. And, you know, I got to say, I'm trying to figure out what media to bring with me, because I kind of plan it out. I'm like, all right, what mood will I be, you know, in what mood will I be, like, on the plane? You know, like, will I want to sit back and read an e-book, you know, and just read this book, or will I want to sit back and you know, decide to read or watch a movie? Am I gonna? Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll get into a new show. You know, I'm like, maybe I'll get into Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Right. So then I'll start, like, I'm gonna start a whole new series. Maybe I'll just buy that series, and that'll be my sort of European companion show while I'm, you know, I'm in Europe. Do you struggle with this? I mean, you got like these long road trips. Do you think, wow, what am I gonna do this time?
No. You know, if this last one, you know, the one where I watched a lot of Breaking Bad, that was really like the first time I've ever done that, where I've gone out of my way to make sure that I had like media with me.
Right.
And if anything, it was really just because like I was aware that season 5 was going on. I'm like, sooner or later, someone's going to spoil this for me. Like,
right.
If I don't jump on this right away, somebody's going to come along and like ruin the fun. So I felt like I got to really power through season 4 if that's possible. And but yeah, generally that never crosses my mind.
So what do you? I mean, what sort of things do you? You just listen to music when you travel?
I like to sleep if I can, or sometimes I must interact with the people I'm traveling with.
Oh yeah, see, that's a mistake. That's your mistake right there.
Is that my downfall?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why I just travel and I just ignore everyone I'm with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good rule of thumb.
Well, you know, especially over in Europe, like, a lot of them don't speak English anyway, so I think, Breaking Bad.
Right. Yeah, just watch some Breaking Bad. So, yeah, I'm thinking, well, maybe I should start a new series. I'm thinking about this Hell on Wheels. Might be a good one. I've heard, I watched the first episode. It's an AMC show.
Right.
And I think it's just starting season 2, or I think season 2 already just kicked off. A lot of people on Twitter saying, you know, now that you're sort of in the in-between phase of Breaking Bad, you got to check out Hell on Wheels. It's a really good show. And, you know, being a history buff, as I am, and I like the Western genre, I caught the first episode of it, and I really liked it. Colm Meaney, I think is his name. Or is it Colin Meaney? The guy who played in Star Trek Next Generation, I think he was one of, like, the... I think he might have been like the transporter chief, like he did, and he was like the Irish guy. He had like the curly sort of red hair, Colm Meaney. You've seen him. You know who I'm talking.
I would probably know who you're talking about.
He plays like this really sort of badass railroad baron, and then you have some other guy who plays like the He's sort of a former soldier. He's kind of an outlaw. You don't know why he's on. He wants to go work on the railroad. And so it's they all kind of come to blows. But he's out there on the far frontier where the tracks are being laid. And he's part of this, like, railroad. And that's what they called it, hell on wheels. Like, it just moved along. The hell in the all day out there laying the tracks and driving the spikes and barely getting time to have some water. And you just keep moving along. And some of them, you know, are former Civil War soldiers and such, but so it's pretty cool. It's
sounds fake.
Yeah, it is. And that, or, you know, it's like maybe Mad Men. Let me dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, and what do you know? What is it? 5-6 seasons of Mad Men? Does that sound about right?
God, I think it's in the fifth season, or the fifth season just wrapped up or something. And I think, God, how did that happen?
Yeah,
everyone I don't know. Praises that show, but. I also thought about The Wire, because people, there seems to be this sort of back and forth on, you know, online about this. Like, there's some people who are real defenders of The Wire as, like, like the best show ever.
And now I think that's overstating the case, but I am a big advocate of The Wire.
You are.
Tell me what you've seen online.
Well, I mean, online or yeah, I mean, what I've seen is that people just, they love the show, and they're so defensive of it, where if you say Breaking Bad is the best show ever, one of the best written shows in modern television history, you're likely to get, but The Wire is of equal ilk, perhaps. So we got this big debate the one night. Me and my friend, we were at the pub down the street. And there was like five or six of people.
Hang on a second. Are you seeing another friend?
Well, this friend happens to be closer. But I mean, look, I'll break up with him if you move here.
I was gonna say, this is getting weird because I was kind of under the impression that you were the only friend that I was supposed to have.
Well, I don't.
And
I mean,
now I'm hearing about these other friends, and
well, he's not really a friend. I mean, I just oh. I would never say that. I mean, he's just a guy I met.
Okay. Well, all right.
Actually, I should take that back. I do social work, and he's a guy that I take out of the home every now and again to help out. Like I get a stipend from the state to take him out for food, and I take him to the pub. Mm-hmm. So like five or six of us were hanging around at the pub.
Wait a minute. 5 or 6?
Well, I mean, these weren't friends. These were also people from the home.
All right.
He and I went out, and it was just like sort of a quiet interlude and a commercial break from a game that was on, and there were like 5 or 6 people sitting there, and I said, I think arguably it's the best show, you know, in modern television history, and you had like two, like a husband and a wife, like who were sitting there at the bar, just looked over and go, yes, 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 and then like the bartender goes, The Wire is the greatest show ever. I'll give you the Breaking Bad is great. So we got this big back and forth debate as to what's the better show.
Well, what was the argument in favor of The Wire over Breaking Bad? I'm curious. I'm a fan of both, so you know, it'd be very difficult for me to and take sides here.
I think they thought it had a bit of an edge to it. It had a grittier realism to
it. Yes, it's very firmly. You know, it's so real that it makes you feel like it could almost be a documentary. I mean, not that it's shot like a documentary. I don't mean that. But
right. I watched the first the episode was long, but it was late at night. And
they are solid hours. You know, they're not 44 minutes or anything like that. They are solid hours of television.
Yeah, in good HBO fashion, just like The Sopranos. You're not getting 40 minutes of television. You're getting the full hour. So, I liked it. I mean, it was really good. It was really hard for me to understand the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, God, what is he saying, you know? Because he just kind of mumbles a lot, the lead guy. But I watched the first episode of it, and boy, did he, you know, he mumbled a lot. I was intrigued, and it was a little hard to follow at first, and I was trying to follow it. And even Natalie, who had, like, seen a few of the episodes before, a few years ago, she purchased, like, the first season on iTunes, and she's like, I just couldn't follow it. But I guess, like you had said, you have to just kind of commit to it, right?
Yeah, I think that's true about The Wire, because the first few episodes, I was like, oh, what have I gotten myself into? And, you know, these are all in my Netflix queue when I still had that. And, you know, I felt like, oh, I got to watch these. But as it went on, I realized, and it's 5 seasons, The Wire, I just thought, I have to see this through to the end. You know, there's just something really, it's unbelievably realistic, I think. And it's really, and part of the reason is that the writer, he writes from his own experience. He'd spent time working in the police department down there. He'd spent time as a teacher. He'd spent time dealing with people at the Baltimore Sun, which is like the focus of the last season. So it's unbelievably real, whereas and relatable. You know, like you feel like I kind of know that. You know what I mean? Like you feel a sense of that. Whereas like with Breaking Bad, I guess I feel less connected. Like I really can't necessarily relate to what's going on a lot of the time with Walt. You know, or like that's not me. Like, oh man, I don't work in that lab. Or you know,
right?
I can't necessarily relate to that. Whereas like all these characters on The Wire are just like undeniably real.
Hmm.
And that's not to say – I'm not trying to say that as if I'm, you know, like, oh, but, you know, I don't believe anything on Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad's incredibly believable. It's very, very credible. But they are very different in that – I guess you would say The Wire is grittier, you know. And maybe there's something familiar about it. You know, it's set in Baltimore, which is not far from, you know, where Clayton and I grew up, and we've both been to Baltimore a number of times. So the setting is familiar, like that kind of adds to everything. You know, there's like familiar sights, like there's the Baltimore skyline, and
yeah.
But I don't know that I would, you know, choose one over the other necessarily. Like they are.
Yeah, that's what I said. Like apples and oranges. I mean, they're great. They're both great shows, I guess, in their own way. And like I wouldn't compare The Sopranos, I mean, to Breaking Bad. I mean. You know, The Sopranos is a great show.
Yeah. Sopranos, like Oz, to me, were these sort of guilty pleasure shows in that characters that would typically be antagonists were protagonists. And I know we've talked about that sort of thing before here on the program. And it's a real guilty pleasure to kind of indulge that, a show that makes you root for someone that, you know, maybe in real life you wouldn't root. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't root for, like, the head of your local mob for him to prevail, right? Like, yeah, I don't know that I want that. I don't want that I want organized crime to win. But like on The Sopranos, you want Tony Soprano to succeed,
right?
You know, and you know that's a strange inversion. And The Wire is similar in that there's everyone's very dirty in The Wire. There's at most, I think, one. There's like one pure character in five seasons. And so, you know, everyone is kind of shades of gray, but that lends itself, you know, to the realism.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see that. How many seasons of The Wire was that? I feel like it's a huge commitment. If I'm going to get into that, it's like if I were to start Lost right now.
Right, and it's funny you bring that up because generally that's what I would go to bat for. If someone was going to say to me, what's the best modern TV series, I would say Lost.
Hmm.
I'd go to bat for Lost. The Wire, because they are full hours and it's five full seasons of, you know, I can't remember if they were 13 or 22 or what they were, but it took, I think it took me longer to get through The Wire than any other television series that I've ever done start to finish. And I did, you know, of course I did the 9 or 10 seasons of The X-Files as they were happening. So it wasn't sure. Like I sat down one night and was like, I'm going to watch them all. It wouldn't have been possible, but the Wire at the end. You know, especially as you realize it, because, you know, it was written to be finite and they're going to tell you this exact story across the five seasons and everything else. As I realized the fifth season was coming to a close, and the second and the fifth are the ones I enjoyed the most, I was almost like dreading it because you knew it was coming to an end. And you really, you know, they do such a great job, especially, I can't think of that actor who plays the main detective. But like you just fall in love with the main characters and even some of the villains, you know, like you don't want to see even though, you know, like, you know, this guy's probably going to get killed before the end of the season. Like, you don't want to see those characters go because you become really attached to them. And it really is very, very addictive, The Wire. But I found the first season to be the hardest. Like, it was a real struggle to get to the end of the first season. And then in those last couple episodes, it really picks up. And then you're like, I've got to keep going.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I'll give this a shot. And I'm really excited. I was trying to time everything. I thought, well, maybe I can get the hardback book. You know, I don't buy a lot of hardback books these days because of, well, just like you said, space, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of space for these things anymore. So
sure.
My bookshelves are filled, and you know what? E-books are cheaper, and I can take notes in them that live on somewhere else, you know, that I can always go back to. And sort of social sharing online, you know, whether it's Goodreads or Copia. So I've been doing a lot of read. You know, I'd have the book club on Copia, which is great. So Michael Chabon has a new book, out, which comes out on September 11th. My favorite author. And I'm really excited about it. It's about a guy. I mean, from what I gather, it's from, I think it's about a guy who, or a couple of guys at work in a record store in Berkeley, California, I think during the 1970s. So I'm pretty excited about that. I wish I could have gotten it. You know, wish
what
I would
is
have
the
had,
title of that?
You know, let me look it up. I had to duck into my secret lair here because my son was crying, so I'm away from my computer. Do you have a screen in front of you by any chance?
I didn't realize you had a secret lair. Yeah, give me a second.
I just duck over to Amazon and do a little search for Shaven. It should be you can pre-order it, and I think it's out on September 11th. I'm really excited about it. You know, he doesn't do a whole lot of interviews, and I thought, oh my God, am I doing a disservice to his name? Because for years I'd called him Shaven. And then I heard the other day as someone was promoting Audible.com on a different podcast I was listening to, I think the Slate Political Podcast, and they were talking about, you know, that one of the best audiobooks you could ever listen to is The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Shaven. And he was recommending that. And he says, oh, you know, he has a new book coming out in a few weeks, but you've got to listen to The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. It is fantastic. Of course, he won the Pulitzer Prize for that book, and that is my all-time favorite book. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, you know, how do you pronounce his name? And like two of the authors or two of the journalists on the show, they're like, it's Shaban. And I'm like, get out of here. So for years I've been mispronouncing his name.
Do you know that though definitively, or were they just guessing?
No, I mean, I thought maybe they're wrong, right? Maybe they don't know, because I could have sworn I've heard his name pronounced in either its radio interviews or something. It's like, where did I heard someone correct me, or I read it in an article where they, you know, they spelled it out phonetically for you, so you knew how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. If anyone knows, let us know on Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. But did you find the name of the book?
I believe it is Telegraph Avenue.
Yeah. Does it give a little description there?
It just says this is a contemporary adult novel set around the San Francisco Bay Area. In an interview with the Washington Post, he said, I would like it to be set in the present day and feel right now the urge to do something more mainstream than my recent work has been. He said it is what he calls a naturalistic novel about two families in Berkeley, set in the present day and has no alternate reality or anything like that.
Hmm.
And that's all he said.
Interesting. Yeah, I hope he does like a book signing near here or something like that, because I definitely would love to meet the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would love to meet the guy.
And I guess they moved this up. Originally they were saying they didn't think it'd be out till 2013, but you're right. It says set for publication. Well, maybe that means distribution, and they might be publishing it starting on that day, but who knows if that means it's actually going to be on shelves. It says publication begins September 11th, 2012.
Seems like a lot of things are coming out September 11th. I guess that's what I'm saying. It would be now. Wish I was leaving like 2 days later, because... Mm-hmm. I would love to bring that book. And Bob Dylan's new album drops on the 11th as well of September.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I listened to that the other day. iTunes, actually, you can listen to it right now for free on iTunes. So probably listening to this right around September 11th. But you're listening to this probably, it's right around when the Apple event is occurring as well on September 12th.
Oh, there's an Apple event now, is there?
Yeah, it's the iPhone 5 event. So,
And what do you think they'll be releasing at that?
It's hard to say. Really is. I got my invitation and I was bummed because I had made plans to go to Germany like months ago. And I was like, shoot. Otherwise, I'd normally be covering it. So I will be covering it from afar in Deutschland.
How is that going to work?
Well, I mean, I'll be online. You know, I'll be live tweeting some of the bigger points from the event. I'll be on our blog and kind of keeping people up to date if there are any sort of big news out about it. So... I'll be taking to Google Plus and other fine places where podcasts, you know, distribute their information. Mm-hmm. So I'll be out there. But in the meantime,
it sounds like a really relaxing vacation.
Well, that'll be the only time I think I'll be online, because I think, you know, the event happens at 10 a.m. Pacific time, so 1 p.m. Eastern time. So what time is that in Germany? Any idea?
Hang on. Say that again?
So 1 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay. So it's going to be, you know, that's probably 6 hours ahead, I'm guessing. 6 or 7.
Great. So I figured, okay, the kids will be asleep. We'll have gotten back from like a day of touristing, and I'll be able to like just jump online and you know, kind of see what's going on with the big announcements. I like to be up on you know, it's my job. I got to cover this stuff, so I need to be up right. on what sort of announcements are coming out about it, you know?
You do like the tech stuff.
I do, man. I do.
I've always known that to be true about you.
Hey, we should take a moment here and thank one of our show sponsors, and our contest continues. So thanks to all of the eggheads who are currently taking part in our website development contest. Mm-hmm. Many of you guys are working on that. Now, you have to the end of the month, right?
That's right.
And what do we ask of them? Just to create a fun Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe-style website. It could be anything we talk about on the show.
Yes, that's right. Really anything at all. We won't hold it against you. You know, originally Clayton wanted all the sites to be tributes to him, and then we've expanded the purview. You can also make them about Clayton's collection of black zip-ups. So either of those, and you want to use our friends over at Squarespace.com, who have just rolled out Squarespace 6. This thing will blow you away. It is so easy to make gorgeous websites using Squarespace 6. Do you need to know any code, Clayton, to do that? I don't think so.
No, it's all drag and drop. That's the beauty of it. In fact, I just built myself a website.
You did? Here it is, claytonsblackzipup.com.
No, it's a photography. I built a photography website, and it took me a day. No joke. I'm not pulling anyone's leg. It took me a day to build this site. It's called photographybegins.com, and it's just a place where I wanted to kind of make mistakes in photography in public. And people could share their thoughts about photography, and we could sort of, you know, just learn the software that's associated with modern photography and everything. I thought it'd be a lot of fun. So I built this site in a day because I wanted to learn all about the new Squarespace. And it's a I don't know if you're looking at it right now, Mike, but tell me, isn't it a beautiful website?
It is. It's so easy to, if you've got an existing blog and you want to give it a really slick modern look, to pull your blog right in is as simple as a click. You drag and drop in photos. They're going to resize them automatically for you. So it doesn't matter if someone's looking at this on their mobile device. If like me, you're sitting in front of a computer monitor and you've got all this, real estate, I guess, for lack of a better expression, on which to see these things. You never have to worry about it being optimized for different screens because Squarespace 6 does all the thinking for you. And that's what I like, Clayton.
Yeah, and
for them to do the thinking for me.
It's so simple, really. And if you're thinking about creating something for your business, the plans, I think it started at $8 a month, and then you get the unlimited plan, which is like $16 a month. And I mean, it's so cheap, it sort of blows me away about how cheap it is. But it's free to sign up. That's why we're doing this contest to build this website. It's free. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to be a part of this contest. And at the end of the month, we're going to give away some hundreds of dollars worth of things. We're giving you a nice big couple hundred dollar credit to scottyvest.com, and we're also giving some other stuff away, some electronics that you're going to love for the winner of the website contest. Mm-hmm. Now, here's all you need to do. It's this simple. Go to squarespace.com/grizzly. That just gives us credit for you having gone there. So you have to go to squarespace.com/grizzly. If you don't do that, then you won't be entered in the contest. And again, it's free to sign up. No credit card needed. And just start playing around and build a website. We already know some of you are building some great websites. A couple of our listeners have written in and said, what are the conditions? All right, I'm going to build one. I'm going to build a couple. And in fact, you can build 5, 10. You can do whatever you want. I really am hoping. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that someone builds a site devoted to Mike and his boiled chicken habit.
Well, that's not going to happen now.
If there's a site that pops up that's called, you know, like mikesboiledchicken.com, I might just have to declare that person the winner.
I think that's really unlikely.
No, I think I'm making it more likely by the moment. I'm really hoping. So, again, it can be anything from the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe archives. You know, we're approaching episode 200, so there's a lot in there, and it would be hilarious if as any sort of inside joke. Now, listen, if you decide to keep your website or you decide to build your own website, you're going to get 10% off the life of that website if you use the coupon code EGGHEAD. Mm-hmm. Egghead for the Egghead Army. So anyway, squarespace.com/grizzly is the website address. That's where you go. Play around with the brand new Squarespace. It's gorgeous. It really is. So we thank them for their support, and I cannot wait to see these websites at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we should mention, if you want to tell us about your website, because you need to do that, you have to tweet us and let us know. Mm-hmm. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter, so you need to say, hey, guys, take a look at my website, because we won't know where it is. You know, you need to let us know where it is.
That is important.
Yeah. And then we'll go through. We'll go through their Twitter stream, and we will catalog all of them.
So that's true. Yeah. Yes, I have nothing further to add there. Everything Clayton just told you is true.
Hey, did you see some comic book news?
There's comic book news?
Well, comic book movie news, I guess.
Do tell, do tell.
Well, there's... No, there's some... I think there was some Thor-related news, wasn't there? I saw that come across the path. I saw some James Bond news. So Daniel Craig says he is down for doing two more Bond films.
Really?
Which I'm excited about, because I like him as a modern-day James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's great, and he fits the current style of the films.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited to see the next one, Skyfall. Mm-hmm. So that one comes out. Does that come out at Christmas?
I think you're right. I think that's toward the end of the year.
Yeah. So Daniel Craig saying he'll do two more of those. J.J. Abrams, releasing some information as to what the next Star Trek film will kind of be like. Apparently, it's going to be dark. Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're hearing. Darkness, maybe even in the title of it. Mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting.
Hmm.
Looking forward to that.
Now, has that actually been confirmed? Because that rumor has been swirling around that might be the title, but no one really knew.
I don't know that it's been confirmed. I think he was letting... Did he go to Twitter and was talking about that? So I thought...
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I did see, this was over on superherohype.com. Did you see the story about, I think it might have been through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, about Christian Bale?
Yeah, and the Batman kid?
Yeah, this kid, who I think he's 5? Help me out if you know what I'm talking about. But he had fought cancer earlier in his life, right? He's 5. He overcame that, and now it's back again, and he said that this sick child's wish was to meet Batman. So Christian Bale actually flew him and his entire family. I'd like to point out, it might have been easier for you to go to them, Christian.
Right.
But Christian Bale flew this kid and his whole family out to meet him in L.A. And he took a break from whatever film he's working on to meet this kid, which, that's a super cool thing to do. I think maybe you remember this better than I, because I don't know, I wasn't paying as close attention to what he was up to at the time. But you remember a couple of years ago, this thing leaked out of him, like, reaming somebody out on the set of a movie.
Right.
Like he was just having a fit. Like, clearly the dude was having a bad day, something ticked him off, and he just, like, ripped somebody a new one.
Right.
Was he doing the Terminator movie? What was he doing?
Yeah, it was that new Terminator movie, and it came out, I think, like, near the time of The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he had filmed that ahead of time, and so it was right around the release of it, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I don't know if it was an associate cinematographer, it was like an assistant director or something like that. But apparently the story ended up coming out about how this guy was sort of reviled by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sort of like speaking on behalf of everyone he had already pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of came to a boiling point. It wasn't as if it was just like one random occurrence. Mm-hmm. Like, he screwed up the shot somehow, this guy. Like, he walked in front of the light, or he, like, walked in front of the camera, so it cast, like, a shadow, you know, mm-hmm. like, was like, where'd that shadow come from randomly, you know? And he just flipped out, because it had been, like, a long day, and then he just goes on and on and on. He's like, who do you think you are? You know, just, if I can find it, I'd love to play it, but, yeah, I don't know. So it's funny now, I don't know if it's like a PR move, but he has since apologized for that. And he's sort of joked about it in the past. But yeah, right. I mean, I found the story here. He actually, back in July, of course, we know that he went to Aurora, Colorado to visit the kids who, you know, some of the
victims of the shooting, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But apparently in Youngstown, Ohio, earlier this year, this Facebook page popped up and created an event called Lighting the Bat Signal for Jaden, bringing together more than 30,000 volunteers to realize the comic book dreams of 5-year-old Jaden Barber, who at the time had been diagnosed with MSD leukemia and given only months to live. They posted this group to help make a wish come true for an amazing 4-year-old boy who is fighting cancer for the second time in his life. One of Jaden's wishes is to meet the real Batman, Christian Bale. The goal is for the group to spread like wildfire over the next few weeks. Jaden will become weaker and weaker. Let's try to make this happen. I don't know where to begin. When I tell you how amazing this whole family is, their selfless love and tireless efforts to help their son have been an inspiration to us all. By creating this group, we can draw attention that we need to help Christian Bale to come and meet Jaden. So instead, Bale flew Jaden and his family to Los Angeles, treated them to lunch at Disney's Club 33. And
The mysterious Club 33.
What is that?
That's that like membership list only thing, and you know there's like an 8-year waiting list to even get on, and like the annual membership to be in it is ridiculous or whatever. And you know, there's like one of those Club 33s hidden in each of the Disney parks. Like if you don't know exactly where it is that you're supposed to go in, you couldn't find it. You know, it's hidden. Maybe I'm getting some of those details wrong, but. I do remember reading in one of those like behind the scenes Disney books that I had that like there's tons of like original animation cells from the early days of Disney on display in this Club 33, which is, you know, like a restaurant and lounge for kind of like VIPs. But I guess if you can afford whatever that membership fee is and you don't mind the waiting list, anybody could get in. It's not like you've got to be a VIP. You just got to have the patience and the bucks.
I never even heard of this thing. So even more exciting apparently to them, however, is the word that Jaden is now in remission. And so the folks at Superhero Hype wanted to join in wishing him and his family the best. And you know what I love about Christian Bale is that he doesn't bring any attention to this, like, well, other than him being a celebrity and, you know, just by nature him being a celebrity, other folks are going to do it. But he's not out there like posting it on his Twitter stream and, you know, putting it on his Facebook page or anything like that. He's totally quiet about it, doesn't mention it, doesn't do anything. And then the only reason we know about it is because these pictures popped up on the Jaden Facebook page.
Right.
So, like, the family posted them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like he, you know, he didn't call us, like, PR person and was like, hey, get this word out. I'm a good guy, you know.
Right. And I think, you know, it's worthy of bringing that up because, like I said, he's a guy who he's taken his lashings in the public eye before. Whether deserved or not, you know, kind of irrelevant. The guy's taken his lashings, and so, you know, here he is. He's doing something that's really selfless, and obviously it's some expense to himself. He flew that entire family out there to make that possible. You know, he's certainly worthy of a pat on the back for that. So,
yeah. So here is that. Here's that information about Star Trek. This week marks the 46th anniversary of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. In the fall, I guess, of what, 1960, what is that, 46 years?
66, right?
66,
Star
yeah.
Right, Batman, Monkeys, Star Trek, 66.
What a year. So it's called Star Trek Into the Darkness is the name of it. Although we haven't been able to officially confirm it, StarTrekIntoTheDarkness.com and StarTrekIntoTheDarknessMovie.com were both registered through Mark Monitor, which is an anonymous domain registry service that just so happens to have been utilized by Paramount Pictures for their recent URLs, like G.I. Joe Retaliation and other sites that they've done. So folks are back. Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, Carl Urban, John Cho, Bruce Greenwood, Simon Pegg, and Benedict Cumberbatch, who, of course, plays...
Oh, thank goodness, Cumberbatch.
Who plays Sherlock Holmes in the Sherlock... The fantastic BBC Sherlock series. Oh, that's a good one. Boy, you got to watch that show. And there's the new American ripoff version of it called Elementary. Did you see that?
I have, yes. I saw something. It was like before a movie that I saw. It was like... coming to TV screens near you. And it was the guy that plays that Jordan character from Dexter.
Right. Jordan and, Chase or Cash.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, right. And Lucy Liu is Holmes. Or is Watson, rather.
Right. Yeah, so, and, you know, he looks pretty good in the role. It'll be interesting to see, though, if it's too Americanized.
I just think it's hard to see him as anything other than Jordan Chase.
Right.
Like, I see that guy, and I'm like, that's Jordan Chase. Like, I immediately think that.
Right. Yeah. Although for me, it was hard to see him as Jordan Chase because I had seen him in that terrible sitcom where George Michael made his appearance.
Oh, wow. What was that show? I know what you're talking about, right? Like in all the trailers, George Michael's like on his desk singing, like he's always fantasizing about George Michael.
Right,
is that
like,
right?
Yeah, that's like the whole premise that he's just like, he's constantly fantasizing about George Michael. And he kind of goes off the deep end at the office, and everyone kind of can't figure out like what's going on with this guy. And he's like, mm-hmm. he just keeps seeing George Michael. It's like, who greenlit that show?
Right.
Right. I don't get it.
No, I thought the same thing when I was seeing the trailers or, you know, the commercials for that or whatever. One, I thought, how out of stuff must George Michael be?
Right.
Because it was clearly him. You know what I mean? Like, even though I don't think he was supposed to have really been part of the series, right? It was that he was fantasizing about him. In order to create those scenes, clearly George Michael was acting as himself, like in these dream scenes. And I don't know, like...
Johnny Lee Miller is his name, the actor.
What was the name of that show? What's the name of that George
I'm trying
Michael
to look
show?
It up right now. I'm doing all this on my iPhone here. And now that the kid's asleep, I guess I could pop out of here. But let's see. But you were going to say something. I'll look it up, but you had a thought.
Well, yeah. So this is what I was thinking, right? Like, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I'm going to use this. I'm going to talk about something here that hopefully I'm not going to get myself in any kind of trouble. But thinking about George Michael, right? And, you know, you got to be familiar with his career. He was in Wham. That was him and Andrew Ridgeley. They had a string of hits in the 80s, probably most famously Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. But they had other hits, too. Clayton, tell me, what is your favorite Wham song?
Oh, boy.
Everything She Wants.
Yes, I was just about to say, Everything She Wants. I couldn't think of it off. Yes, but it's sort of a little quieter, not as upbeat as Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah, yeah. And Edge of Heaven is mine. You know, so they had some other hits, right? They had a very famous Christmas song that still gets played around the holidays every year.
Last Christmas. Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah. Right. You gave me a heart. Yeah, that one. That's Wham, whether you know it or not. You know, they sang on We Are the World. And then they broke up. And that is to say, Andrew Ridgeley went away. And then George Michael had a solo career, right? Like Faith was, what, the number one selling album of 1987, if I'm not mistaken?
Right.
You know, he did Monster Business, had tremendous singles, continues. He's still super popular in Europe. He even just sang at the Olympics, right, at the closing ceremonies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was
good. You know,
good.
They dragged him out. And, well, you know, he spent his time being lashed in the tabloids and everything else. You would think that he's got to be sitting on a huge pile of money, right?
Eli Stone is the name of the show.
Eli Stone. Wow. How long did that last? Two episodes?
The complete first season is available on Amazon.
Wow, that almost implies that there's a second one.
And Natasha Henstridge was in that show.
Natasha Henstridge?
If there's a second season, buy this with the Eli Stone second season. So there was two seasons of this thing.
Hmm. Who wow. is Natasha Henstridge? That name it sort of rings a bell, but sort of doesn't.
She's the very beautiful blonde who I think was in the first Species. Remember that? It's like the alien.
Was she in La Femme Nikita?
Hmm. Man, we're really digging. We should just have like IMDb pulled up for this whole episode, right? Usually, I mean, it's funny because we're sort of scratching into things that we typically know, you know. But this episode, we have to dig a little bit here. I'll look that up. But you finish your thought.
So, right, yeah, you would think George Michael, if he was smart with his money, and who knows, I mean, he's had his legal woes and everything else, that can be quite a drain on the coffers, I would bet. You get some high-priced lawyers that have, you know, crazy retainer fees and things like that. Yeah, your fortune could disappear quite suddenly.
Right.
So you think about a guy like that, like, does he really need to work? You know? I mean, maybe he wants to, right? I'm sure if they called you up and you were sitting home doing nothing – and they're like, hey, you want to come sing at the closing ceremony of the Olympics? He'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I can come do that. Right. He probably wasn't paid for that. Right. I don't think the Olympic Committee pays entertainers to come in and be part of that sort of thing. You do it because, you know, hey, I'm proud to be British and my country is the host of the Olympics. And I'm going to be here to represent, you know, the Union Jack or whatever. I don't know, whatever the appropriate expression might be there.
Right.
I don't really know. But I would guess... You know, unless, you know, he wasn't all that smart. Like, that dude probably doesn't have to work. You think? Like, he could probably just do nothing.
Right. I wonder what you do at that point in your life, you know, to just kick back, hang out. Like, it's hard for me to believe, like, Phil Collins, who's, like, on top of the world, one of the greatest musical, you know, acts of the 80s, decided to retire. He's done. Mm-hmm. He's kind of done it all. I think you slip into dementia. I think you slip into...
into dementia.
I just think when you do that, when you kind of hang it up like that, you know, it's just, yeah, Just sort of like sealing your fate, I guess.
Sealing your fate? What do you mean?
Well, what I'm saying is, don't you, I mean, you see those people who, when they stop working, they just become like a shell of themselves. You know, they just, they're like, what am I going to do with my days? And then they just kind of get depressed, and then, you know, and then I think it just adds to their misery, and then they kind of, I don't know, psychosomatic in some sort of way, where they sort of come up with disease, and, you know, they just want to kind of be done with things. You know, it's very rare. It's like, oh, you know, I'm going to be 55 and I'm going to retire, and now that's it. Now my life's beginning, you know? You hear that all the time. You hear that all the time from people who hang it up from their profession, right? Like Mike Wallace,
mm-hmm.
right? He was getting up there in age, and he just, you know, he just kind of felt like, oh, I should just hang this up, you know? And it wasn't too long, like very few years after that, he passed away. I think that's why Tom Brokaw still hangs around.
He's worried it's a death sentence.
Right. I mean, if this is something you've been born to do, you know, around broadcasting, sort of political analysis, you've covered 24 political conventions in your life going back to the 1960s. Like when NBC calls you and says, hey, Tom, we need you for, you know, the 2012 RNC and the DNC in Tampa and Charlotte. Yeah, I'm there. I need a, you know, and we sort of like to see Tom Brokaw there. It's sort of a, you know, a steady ship in a call in a crazy stormy sea, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't start showing up. Was he going to be sitting at his ranch in Montana just with his legs up with an Afghan over his legs with like a hot cup of tea?
Maybe. I think he's got the shakes.
Because, you know, if he was that way, right, he'd want to be like calling in. He'd be like, hey, I know no one called me this time around, but can I phone into this show and just be on the phone at least? You know, I have something to say, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think – to extrapolate on your thought, there is something calming about the voice of Tom Brokaw, right? Like what you were saying there about him is he's sort of the calmness in the sea. Like I think there's a truth to that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
And I think there is something to what you said as well. Like I was thinking about Phil Collins, actually. While you were talking about broadcasting there, I was still spinning back to what you were saying about Phil Collins. I don't know what Phil Collins is up to anymore. Like he doesn't tour, right? He doesn't. What does he do?
No, you know, weird kind of connection. I think my wife is friends with, or hasn't, I don't know, a former coworker left where she worked, I think formerly at CBS. And maybe I have this story slightly wrong, but she was engaged to Phil Collins. And I think.
Wait a second. Natalie was engaged to Phil Collins? Can we make that the show title episode?
You need to get to the bottom of that on the next episode of The Trending Show. Yeah, seriously, ask her this.
Which I'm going to be recording in about 20 minutes.
Ask her that question because I really don't know the full story. But I think she was friends with someone who worked at CBS who mm-hmm. got engaged to Phil Collins and he was in retirement. And I think he's, again, get the right from the horse's mouth and don't tell my wife I called her a horse.
Yes.
That he's like deaf. Now
mm.
that he had, you know, he had like some significant ear damage as a result of touring all those years, mm-hmm. Which is a common refrain that you hear from musicians of that era, right? They just didn't wear protective ear gear.
Right, right.
And so I think Phil Collins is deaf or medically deaf. We know that didn't he have some wrist issue that he like sort of refused to ever get his hand operated on because he feared that he would never be able to play the drums again?
Well, I think he did have one set of surgeries done on his wrist and they told him from that point on he had to do far less drumming. And that's why he never did another full scale tour. You know, like he would always take the tour would have a day and then he'd be off 2 days. Like he, you know, it was never one of those like I'm doing, you know, 90 dates this summer. Like he had to take a more relaxed tour schedule. And then for a while, you know, of course, not only is he known for his drumming, but also as a vocalist. And you know, sometimes he'd just be out there front and center singing and someone else would be doing the drumming because of the damage to his wrist. But they said that I think he was being urged to have like a second set of surgeries done on his wrist. And I think maybe that's what prompted him into retirement.
Mm. Yeah. So find that story out. Maybe you can relay it again. But I'm pretty sure that's pretty close to accurate. So I think he just got retired. I think they live over in England somewhere on a farm, like out in the middle of nowhere.
Interesting.
Either that or I might have been like New England somewhere, like, mm-hmm. You know, like upstate New York or somewhere like that. Like he's got like a big palatial sort of, I don't know, farm or vineyard or something. And that's just where he hangs out. And you got to think, like, if you're the female in that situation, are you excited that, like, you're – well, you probably love him, right? But, look, it's Phil Collins. It's not like you're not aware of his star status, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going into this thing blindly. So are you disappointed, or you wish that he would, like, kind of be out there again?
He comes home, maybe gets sick of him right away.
Right. Like, I'm marrying Phil Collins. Oh, Mary, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's great. You're marrying a huge rock star. That's wonderful. You know, yeah, he'll be out on tour all the time, new album. It's going to be great. We're going to see the world. And he's like, honey, I got some news. I'm retiring. I'm not going to be doing this anymore. I'm just going to, you know, it's just going to be you and me now. We're just going to be here on the farm. We're just going to hang out, drink wine. She's like, oh, really? What did I get suckered into?
That was really a creepy Phil Collins impression that you did there. He's just like, yeah, I won't even do the accent. Yeah, he's just like, yeah. He comes down one morning, he has like those carpal tunnel things on his wrists. He's just like, yeah.
Creepy Phil Collins.
You know that world tour we were talking about? And he just looks at the, like, those braces, like those flesh-colored braces, right, as if you wouldn't see them there.
It's like the Penguin in Arkham City. He's got like his hands wrapped up like with bandages, and he's like, hey, honey, I'm not going on tour anymore, honey. Can you just rub my carpal tunnel?
That's all a really does. Creepy Penguin impersonation you just did.
Well, you know, I had that on the brain. I just, right before I got on the call with you, I just beat the Penguin in Arkham City. And there's all sorts of cool surprises in that game, which is the follow-up, of course, to
Arkham Asylum. So you did beat it, or you just beat that level?
I beat that level. And knowing my percentage completed, I'm like at 6% done.
Mm. So you have a little way to go.
Yeah. But boy, was this level awesome. Because it's you're trying to find Mr. Freeze, who the Penguin like has snagged and like stolen his technology for something. And so like you're kind of trying to help Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. But it's like this whole like frozen level, like underground. And it's really, really fun. And then there's like a little Easter egg. Suddenly you're like, why am I suddenly fighting Solomon Grundy? And it's really cool. And so I cannot say enough about that game. But you don't have to like complete it in any sort of straight fashion, because as you're going along through the city, like all sorts of side missions pop up. You know, there'd be like a phone call randomly from Zaz, who like wants you to like try to track him down. He's put some bombs around the city, but that's not part of like the main plot. But you can like go off and do that. You can hear like distress calls from people.
How did he get Batman's phone number?
Well, he's just calling payphones around the city.
Oh, that's easy. Clayton, don't answer those. They've got germs on them.
So that's what I do. Like, I'm like, I'm not talking to Zaz right now. He's calling, but I'm going after the Penguin. Zaz can wait. He's creepy tattoo man.
He's a B-lister. Not even. He's like a D-lister.
He is. He was in Batman Begins.
Time with Zaz. Yes, he was. And he has a brief cameo then in the next one, too, right?
Does he?
Nah, maybe I'm mistaken.
But I love how Dr. Crane is in all three films.
Yeah, I liked how they kind of wove him all throughout.
He got a nice little pop in the theater when he popped up too, right?
Yeah, he did. People really did like – they enjoyed seeing that. They liked the continuity of it, you know?
That's, yeah.
I think the continuity is not something to be discarded.
Mm.
So, well, this is what I was trying to get to earlier, which is kind of a weird thing. And, I feel a little defensive of him from time to time, because he's become a friend of ours over the last 2 years, is one of the first guests we ever had here on The Grizz, Stan Bush. And you may know that his most famous song, The Touch, is part of that new High Moon Studios Activision game, Transformers Fall of Cybertron. Have you played any of that by any chance? I've seen trailers online, and it looks mind-blowing.
So I haven't, because I've been preparing for a lot of stuff lately. I have the game, and I'm going to, once I get through a little bit further in Arkham City, I'm going to be playing it because I can't wait. And yeah, I have the game, but it looks amazing.
Yeah. Like, I watched a couple trailers, and I know those can be deceiving. The trailers can be a little deceiving, but what I've seen online of this game, it looks mind-blowing. Like, the one trailer I saw, it's like all the Autobots and Decepticons that I care about, like the Gen 1 guys. They're all fighting, and then all of a sudden, do you remember that there was a Transformer that was a whole city? Do you remember that? He was called Metroplex.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Which sounds like a health supplement, doesn't it? Like, hey, did you get my canister of Metroplex? I really need that. Like, I guess Megatron's about to kill Optimus Prime or, you know, laser his head off because robots don't die. And then behind him, Metroplex transforms and stands up and, you know, it's like a city stands up. And it was, like, so impressive just watching this. I was like, oh, my God, this game looks incredible. But in any event, Stan's most famous song, The Touch, is in it. I haven't played the game. But the people at High Moon Studios have also been remixing The Touch. They've remixed two new versions of it, which are coming soon. It's going to be released as a single to all the digital outlets everywhere. As you know, kind of like a tie-in with Fall of Cybertron. And I just got to hear these. And they've done a really awesome job. Like, they took elements from the classic version of The Touch. They took, like, this new guitar solo. They took some of the more modern, like, you know, the Sans theme version, the more modern version of The Touch. And they've come up with two really, really cool mixes. One's, like, super heavy guitar, but they're excellent. And I think this is the kind of thing that you and I would probably wonder about if maybe, you know, we were less in the know than we are right now. And that is, it certainly has the appearance in this case that, like, Stan just keeps going back to that well over and over and over again. Like, right. These will be, I would guess, this has got to be at least the fifth remake of that song by Stan. And that's, you know, if we were sitting back as, like, casual fans, I think we'd be like, what the heck? Like, that's not the only thing he's ever done.
Right.
You know, he does have some other songs. For example, I think equal if not superior track from the same Transformers soundtrack as The Touch is his song Dare, which right. is beloved by Transformers fans and by others too. Like, it's just like this awesome anthemic motivational rock song that just like makes you want to stand up and fight. Like, it's a great song. But I always see people knocking him, saying stuff like, oh, like, why does he just keep redoing that? Like, why does he keep going back to that? And I think, like, the real answer behind that, I think, is maybe I can't think of this. Can you help me out here? It used to be referenced on the X-Files all the time that when you can't figure out the solution to something, the easiest and most obvious answer is 90% of the time the correct one.
Hmm.
Do you remember that? That's like somebody's law. I don't remember that. But it used to come up like at least once a season on the X-Files because that's how Scully would always refute Mulder. Mulder would have these really convoluted explanations for everything, and Scully would say, well, you know, there's probably also a very simple explanation for this. And, you know, she'd base her answer on medical science or something that she knew to be fact.
Isn't it and, Occam's razor? Isn't that the...
Hmm. I don't know.
Isn't that the thing? It's like the... It ends up being the simplest explanation ends up almost always being the correct one.
Right. You could be right. I don't really know. Hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was correct. But, you know, Stan co-wrote The Touch with Lenny Macaluso, who's a friend of his to this day. They've recently collaborated, and this is part of why I happen to have this knowledge. They recently collaborated on a song called Heat of the Battle, which Stan has been kind enough to get Lenny on board with as well, to give me their permission to use. That is the song that I come out to. If you were to come see me wrestle somewhere in an arena, when I come to the ring, the song that plays is Heat of the Battle by Stan Bush. And because Stan and Lenny are still good friends, in order to get something done legally as it relates to the rights to The Touch and the creative intellectual properties and things like that, Stan calls Lenny up, says, hey, are you cool with this? If they agree, it gets done. It's that simple. Whereas the song Dare was co-written by Vince DiCola and an Australian lyricist who I want to say his name is Scott Shepherd, but I know I'm not getting that right. But Stan is the performer of the song. You know, the lyrics are by this Australian guy whose name I think is Scott Shepherd, but is almost certainly not. And the music is by Vince DiCola. And Stan did contribute to it, of course. But people are like, oh, I wonder why he doesn't do that. Well, Stan doesn't have control over that. That's a matter of hunting down this guy from Australia, who knows if anybody's ever stayed in touch with that guy from the one project that they worked on years ago. And then you need to get Vince DiCola involved. And it's not like, you know, Vince isn't exactly obscure or difficult to find. He's out there working all the time. In fact, quite recently and quite famously, he has made the original theme song for King of Trios 2012, which is happening very, very soon. See how
awesome.
I'm tying this all together? But then you got to hunt those guys down, right? And then you've got to say, well, look, if you're going to remake this song, you know, without our participation, what is the percentages that we're going to make? Then we've got to get our lawyers involved to negotiate who actually has the rights, who owns the master, who's going to control the licensing options for this kind of thing. Are you going to pay to go into the studio and re-record it? Are we supposed to absorb some of that cost? No, we want the studio to pay for it. It's a huge logistical mess. And I think, you know, that's – I see that come up time and time and time again. The people are like, why is it that he's always, you know, revisiting The Touch and not Dare? And the answer is really quite simple, because The Touch can be affected by Stan picking up his phone and making one phone call to a guy he talks to all the time, whereas to revisit that or any of the other songs that an artist has collaborated on quite simply can be a real, like, legal wrangling nightmare.
Right.
To make something like that happen. And, you know, it's just a matter of that. Like, who really – and then you have to ask yourself, you know, if let's say you wanted to do that. I want to remake this song and release it as a single. And I think about all these people that have to get paid. I've got to justify the cost of going into the studio, you know, the recording time. I've got to bring in other instrumentalists to play these other parts. I have to pay all of them. I'm going to spend all this money – to make this, and is this going to not only make back the money that I've invested, but will it be profitable, or am I just wasting my time? That's the kind of question you have to answer. And I don't think, given those two options, like, well, here's this thing I can get done for you probably with one phone call, or here's this huge legal nightmare over here waiting for you. High Moon Studios, which one do you pick?
Right.
Which one do you want to roll with here? Like, it's obvious.
You know, it's funny you bring this up, because I had been meaning to talk to you about this, and I don't know if you knew this story or not, but recently we had we've been in this, like, summer concert series on Fox and Friends, which sort of wrapped up a few weeks ago, and there were some pretty cool acts on there, and there were a lot of, actually, who were, like, the top of iTunes charts, people I wasn't really familiar with until they were on the show, but we had some big country artists and some rock artists and so forth. Well, Def Leppard was on.
Mm.
And they were in town promoting that Rock of Ages movie.
Oh, okay.
I think they're in that movie. I didn't
see
it.
Yeah, a couple of their songs are. I don't know if they actually appear in it, but their songs definitely are.
So they're in there sort of appearing, a famous hair band, of course, from the 80s and 90s, and very, very popular still. I mean, they sell out arenas still, you know?
Right.
Huge, huge band, right?
Yeah.
And so they were on the show, and I had interviewed one of them many years ago when I lived in Dayton, Ohio, for the Daily Buzz, and they were on the show this time around. I got to say hi to them, and I'm sure they didn't remember me, you know, but I said hello, and we chatted for a little bit, and, you know, then they were on the show, and they were great. They played, like, Pour Some Sugar on Me. They played a lot of their classics throughout the 3 hours of the show. It was really cool, and there was a whole plaza outside. It was just packed with people to see them, right?
Yeah.
And the tour – I mean, they easily had, like, the biggest tour, you know, guitar setup and switchboard, everything. I mean, all their, like, just big black boxes, those big crates it's funny. You'll see that more in season 5 of Breaking Bad. But those types of big, you know, touring crates, whatever you call them. Anyway, I found it interesting because here's what they're doing with their music. Apparently, they don't own the rights or they're not getting any sort of digital royalties right now from their music because it was sort of pre-digital download era.
Right. So it was outside the scope of the contracts they signed.
Right. And so the record companies are making, like, money hand over fist. So if I download a song from them, like, let's say I download Photograph, you know, great. Great Def Leppard song, right? Let's say I download that song. Apparently, they get, like, nothing from it.
Right. No, that's not that uncommon, though, because, you know, it's interesting, I think, the way recording contracts have changed now to take into consideration the possibility of new types of distribution in the future. And it'll even say, you know, that we're not just talking about physical media, but any digital media or things like that exist now or anything to be invented in the future, because so many artists are in that same position, I think, that Def Leppard's in.
Yeah. So interestingly, here's what Def Leppard has decided to do. They went back into the studio or are currently going back into the studio and they are re-recording all of their songs.
Right on.
So, and I don't know if they can pull the other versions. But there'll be, like, new versions of Pyromania. I mean.
Right. They're going to be in that same boat then that Stan is, right? Because Let's say you wanted to license that classic version of the Touch. You don't call Stan's LA Records for that. That's controlled by Sony. You know what I mean? Like, that's the exact same issue. And that's why he's got his own version of those songs out there. So that, you know, for the exact same reason that Def Leppard needs to have their versions of the songs. Because Def Leppard's not making anything because of the nature of the record deal that they had signed back in the 80s. And I think there's tons of other 80s artists that are probably in that exact same boat. Or think about, you know, like when we had Clark Dashler on from Johnny Hates Jazz on the program not all that long ago, about artists like that, where you hear, you know, that was another group that they probably had a year's time where they made great money, but probably it was about a year, give or take. Then, do they want to spend the money to go out, like, whoever it is now that owns that Johnny Hates Jazz album, what was that called? Turn Back the Clock was the one with Shattered Dreams on
right,
it?
Right, Turn Back the Clock.
Do they want to go out and fight a legal battle to try and get back the rights to that? Like, what is it? Think about that money. Like, what's that investment really worth? Like, how much, who knows? How much money do you think Shattered Dreams and royalties still collects? Like, is it worth their time to go out and fight for that now? Because, you know, at the time, the record contract that they signed couldn't have even anticipated things like iTunes coming in the future.
Hmm. It's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And I don't know how you future-proof contracts like that.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that new type of verbiage that's in there, you know, like I described to you, that says, you know, something or, you know, some other method that might be invented in the future. Like, it's got to be – it's in there in some way so that if it came down to it, they've got something legally to try and protect themselves from – you know, exactly that type of eventuality. It'd be really interesting, you know, the next time we get somebody on that might be able to speak to that, it'd be interesting to talk to somebody who, you know, maybe had a record contract like that in the 80s, and that's where the majority of their most recognizable hits are, and like, how does that affect them? And who knows, maybe they wouldn't want to talk about that, you know?
Right.
You know, people sometimes, they don't want to discuss their finances and that kind of stuff on a podcast with us. But
shocking.
Right, but, you know, we can also be quite beguiling when we need to be. So,
it's true.
Who knows?
Maybe it's a good word.
Maybe we could weasel it out of some people if we really had to.
I haven't heard that in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well, let's pause here, and we have some feedback from some folks on Twitter and Facebook.
Whoa, we got some feedback.
Yeah, and a feed bag, so we'll dive into that a little bit here. Nothing crazy, but we'll do that. Mike's going to tell us about our good friends at Cobra. Longtime sponsors of the show, but man, they have some great new technology in the pipes.
In the pipes. Yeah, that's an interesting expression. I will tell you about our great friends and show sponsors, Cobra Electronics. They've been with us probably longer than anybody we've got on the network right now. They make it possible for us to deliver programs like the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe to you free of charge every week. It's the same on my parenting podcast, Daddy On Board. Couldn't do it without Cobra Electronics. You've no doubt heard us talk about the Cobra iRadar system that makes you a safer and more alert driver. It has, at least since I started taking it everywhere I go in the car, it saved me from ever getting another speeding ticket. It warns you about any type of speed detection or red light cameras, any of that type of information. And it's powered by the Aura Driving Hazard database so that all the information you're getting is current and it's verified and re-verified twice a day. For accuracy. They're also the inventors of the Cobra Tag system. It's an ingenious two-way locator system that pairs with your smartphone, and then you put your Cobra Tag, this fob, on whatever it is you want to protect, a laptop bag, for example. You put it on your keychain, anything you're prone to misplacing, and then you can call it from your phone if you ever misplace it. Or, if you've got that Cobra Tag protected item and you misplace your phone, it works in reverse, too. You can call it from the key fob. In addition to that, if you were to misplace that Cobra Tag protected item and it's so far outside the range that you can't even hear it ringing, guess what? It'll draw you a map to where it is. This is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to amazing innovation from our friends over at Cobra Electronics. Go to Cobra.com right now. They put together great demo videos so that you can check it out. People who are frequent road trippers or live on the road like professional drivers, you'll find a world of awesome solutions waiting for you to discover over there. You can get them at deep discount, and sometimes even buy one, get one free offers exist in the specials section. Just look on that left-hand navigation. When you're ready to go shopping, check the specials section first. Great incentives are in there, and they're changing all the time.
Absolutely. So our thanks to Cobra and the fine folks over at Cobra Electronics. We appreciate their support of the show.
Yeah.
So we have a Twitter page, Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter, as you well know. We've got thousands.
I do. I know.
We have thousands of great folks over there who support the show. We appreciate them. So a lot of people chiming in on this. We were tweeting out earlier this week about the Hobbit movie.
Mm.
And Mike Matthews writes us and says, because he says the Hobbit app is out now, I guess, for iOS and Android, and it's revealed some new photos. And Mike Matthews, because, you know, the people are wondering if this thing's going to be any good. He's written, he says, according to my buddy, who is very close source on this project, it's going to be big and it will not disappoint. So thank you for that.
Here's some vague things I wanted to tell you. I can't tell you who told me this. I just want you to know it's going to be big.
Toby Hal wants to know, did we watch John Carter? It wasn't bad. He said you had to like Colonel Powell, played by the infamous Walter White, which I didn't realize that Bryan Cranston is in that.
Mm. Okay.
John Carter, of course, that big flop of a movie this year.
Yep.
No, we haven't. I haven't seen it. You have seen it?
Nope.
Hmm.
No, I don't think I'm going out of my way to see that one either. You haven't sold me on it yet, even with Bryan Cranston in it.
Let's see. How can I download episodes other than the 10 listed in iTunes? We get this question a lot. Or on your site, I can only play them from what I can tell. No, you should be able to right-click on them on our website and be able to download all of them. So if that's wrong, let us know, and we'll try to fix that for you.
Clayton will fix it while he's on vacation.
Trey Irby wants to know, Mike, will David Byrne's new record merit a mention on a future Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe?
Oh, is that out? I knew he was working on something. Oh, what is that female artist's name? Ah, it escapes me right now. I didn't know it was out. So, yes, absolutely. I really would like to hear something new from him where he's doing more of the singing, because on that concept album he did with Fatboy Slim, Here Lies Love, you know, that was all about Imelda Marcos, he only sings, I think, on one track. He sings American Troglodyte. That's the only track. Out of like 30 songs, David Byrne only sings one.
Oh, here it is. It comes out, another big release on September 11th.
Mm.
It's called Love This Giant by David Byrne.
And who is with him on that? I know there's some other artist on that with him.
And Saint Vincent.
Saint Vincent.
There was no delineating what the roles were, explains Clark, whoever the hell Clark is, of the recording. It's a collaboration I'm truly proud of. And the duo also split lyrical and vocal duties on the record, which, despite eschewing a traditional guitar bass drums lineup in favor of idiosyncratic horn arrangements, presents itself as infectious and modern hook-laden rock. So it's David Byrne and St. Vincent, but Clark is the person's name, I guess. That's weird. I don't know who this person is. It's a woman.
Yes. The only thing I really remember about it is when they released the promotional art, they had distorted her face and David Byrne's face to make them seem grotesque.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
And I was like, what is the purpose here? Like, who's selling, you know what I mean? Who thought that was a good idea?
Right. So that is, that is out. By the time you're listening to this, or you might be, we're recording a little bit early because heading to Germany, you might already be listening to this when this is out. So grab it. We'll have a little review. I might buy it while I'm over in Germany on iTunes and listen to it on the flight back so we can have a little discussion about it next time.
Hmm. All right. I'll take you up on that offer. So, yes, while Clayton is off Oktoberfesting it up in the wilds of Germany, we'll be taking a short vacation, but you'll barely notice. Out there in podcasting land, you'll barely even notice that he went on vacation. And in the meanwhile, of course, all of our other great Grizzly productions will continue more or less on schedule. And King of Trios, of course, good grief. September 14th, 15th, and 16th, come up and see me. It's the biggest tournament in all of professional wrestling. And that takes place at the Palmer Center in Easton, PA. So I'd love to see you there. And I also want to throw this out there, because by the time this airs, I guess the cat will be out of the bag, about a live webinar that I'm going to be hosting in the month of October. It's going to take place on Sunday, October 21st. It'll be available worldwide.
Now, this is exciting. And I know a little bit about this project you're doing. And
You better.
Yeah, I heard a little something about this. Mm-hmm. And this is incredible. I mean, so people around the world will have an opportunity to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, I've done, I don't know, I've probably done over 100 seminars in the last 12 or 13 years all over the planet. Probably done one in every European country I've ever been to. I've had the opportunity to teach people all over the world. I've also had the great opportunity to learn from people all over the world, wherever I've gone. And oftentimes what I hear is, oh, you know, I'd love to make it to your seminar, but I can't make it there, or I can't make it that weekend. I have another commitment. It's not possible for me to get out of the house that weekend. Well, I've got a remedy for you. I'm coming right into your home. This live webinar of mine, Sunday, October 21st, which will start at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern, so it's not too late for all of the folks over in Europe to get on board with this. To clarify, though, it is aimed at other professional wrestlers, and it is entitled The Power of You, and I'm going to discuss concepts of self-promotion, marketing, and branding as it relates to modern audiences for the pro wrestling performance genre, and it is specifically geared toward working professionals that are interested to expand their reach. And this will be, as I said, available worldwide. And I'll bring you some more information, as that's still, I don't know, five, 6 weeks away, something like that. I'll bring you some more information about this live webinar of mine in the weeks to come.
Awesome. Can't wait to see. I will be online and watching it whenever that happens. So give me the dates as we approach more closely.
I will. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Oh, her name's Annie Clark, but she goes by the stage name of St. Vincent.
I see.
This is like a whole episode of us looking stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. We like to be informed.
Mm-hmm. Right, because most of the episodes we give out misinformation.
Right. So this time, anyway.
Right. Yeah, a total change of pace for us.
Yeah. All right, there you go. That's going to do it for us, everyone. And we will see you back here next time.
Mm-hmm. Auf Wiedersehen, Herr Morris.
Ciao.